We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping. We work too hard. We deal with conflict. We grieve. Our hearts get broken. We worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're human. Our app gives you hundreds of meditations from over 30 leading experts. It helps a lot. And you can now enjoy 8 free meditations on Alexa. Just ask her to enable Meditation Studio. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. We love having you with us. Today's guest is Rachel Cook. Rachel is the founder and CEO of a startup called Seeds, which has pioneered a way to build social good directly into in-app and website purchases. She does this by giving companies a way to easily donate a portion of sales to help those in need. Her vision is to help businesses grow, give customers a way to easily make a difference, all while helping those in need around the world. Rachel is a former stock trader who started her social impact journey by directing and producing a feature documentary that explored the impact of microloans on women around the world. I think you'll find the differences in her life before and after her first Vipassana meditation retreat to be pretty amazing. Now, here's Rachel. Rachel, thank you so much for being on Untangle today. I'm so happy to have you on our show.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks, Patricia.
Yeah, you have such a great story and it's such a personal one. You talk about having burned out in a really high stress job as a stock trader in New York City. And I'm just curious, what was that like for you? And was that your first experience with high levels of anxiety? You know, just talk to us a little bit about that time in your life.
It was a crazy time. I really enjoyed stock trading and I was good at it, but I wasn't very awake yet, I'd say. I think I wasn't very self-aware at all. And I wasn't, it was just like, I was running around all the time. I was just going and going and I was drinking a lot. And I was in this sort of very, an environment that had a lot of unhealthy energy really permeating the culture. That was affecting me as well in ways that I wasn't necessarily conscious of. I was really deeply unhappy at that time, but I wasn't even aware enough yet to kind of recognize the depth of my unhappiness.
When you said, so this was like in your early 20s, I think, right?
Like mid-20s.
Mid-20s, yeah. When you say you were deeply unhappy, did you feel like you were successful? And would you say that that unhappiness was tied to being on treadmill, on autopilot?
I definitely would say the unhappiness had a lot to do with being on this treadmill on autopilot for sure. I don't know what I thought about sort of the concept of success and what that meant for me. I don't think I was terribly interested in quote unquote success, but it was always profitable as a trader. I think I liked that it was just me and I either made money or I lost money and that was it. So I didn't have to deal with office politics or bureaucracy in the way that you often have to in most jobs. the misogynistic culture stopped there, and that when I was performing and that was it.
And I was going to ask you how you were dealing with your anxiety, but you mentioned that you were drinking a lot. Would you say that that was sort of, I don't know, would you say like an addictive culture? Because stock trading is, you know, very high energy. And then to calm down, were you drinking a lot? What was that whole scene like for you?
Interesting question. I mean, a lot of the guys I worked with were also using various substances in various ways to come down or to enhance their performance, or they perceive that like doing cocaine would make them better traders or whatever. I was never into that part of the scene, but alcohol was just sort of my default way to do everything, sort of numb the anxiety. And then I would be super social and super excited, and I'd meet a bunch of people. I'd use it to calm down at the end of the day. I used it, it just functioned as sort of a catch-all for any anxiety-producing activity. And it was really bad. I mean, I got a DUI. I was just terribly unhealthy. I also ate really poorly. I was in a really toxic romantic relationship with another stock trader at that time. It was just bad. And I didn't even recognize how bad it was, let alone how to kind of get out of that situation.
What was your wake-up call, or did you have a wake-up call?
I did have a wake-up call, actually. Maybe there were two, but they were around almost exactly the same time. It was like September of 2009, so I was 25, and two things happened. I was sitting on the trading desk one night, and I came across an op-ed in the New York Times about microloans. It was a Nick Kristof op-ed, and specifically it was about how microloans were this great investment in women who are discriminated against essentially by the financial system, and they can't get access to capital. So, you know, it was a story about a woman who'd taken out a loan for $60. I think she lived in Pakistan, and she used it to get her family out of an enormous amount of debt that her husband had gotten the family into. And they had only had daughters, and the husband would beat her because they'd only had daughters. And then I remember the story ended, and I think she had a third daughter, and the husband said something like, "Now I understand that girls have as much value as boys." So it was, I think Kristof's good at sort of moving stories. And immediately upon seeing that article, I thought, okay, this touches on what I've been thinking about in terms of systemic misogyny built into the financial system. These loans are a great investment in most regions, so that appeals to the successful investor in me. In that moment, it was more like an epiphany where I just realized, I can make a film about microloans made to women around the world. Yeah, just like in a flash, I decided to do that. And it was, I don't know that I've had a moment of clarity that sort of adjusted my direction so completely before or since.
Well, let me tell our audience, if they don't know Nick Kristof, he's a regular op-ed editor for the New York Times, and he always writes about things that have huge social and personal impact. And so many people follow him. And it's so interesting that your wake-up call was something positive like that versus blacking out in the subway, or because you were sort of heading down this other path. And what was that like to have that epiphany? I mean, did you quit your job at the trading desk right away, or did you start working on the business on the side? And tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about the meditation part.
I would say, when I mentioned that there were probably maybe two moments that provoked a wake up around that time, that was the more positive one. Then there was sort of a more negative wake up call. Or it was just like, I reached a point where I'd broken up with the boyfriend that I had the toxic relationship with, who had been a stock trader as well. And I realized that this is awful. So just being in that environment had pushed me to a point where I was at least conscious of the idea that I had a lot of hostility and anger. Yeah, that was definitely kind of
that's. And then what was the timing for when you started? Because one of the reasons we're having this conversation is because your meditation practice has had a huge impact on you, and you've made a lot of changes as a result. When did that all start?
Sure. I started seeking. The initial work that I did with a psychotherapist was sort of the foundation. Then I became more interested in spirituality. I grew up in a non-denominational Christian church in a small town in Ohio. So I'd been introduced to religion in form of, like, my family went to church every week. And when I was a kid, I mean, I really felt like I felt something in the church. Mm-hmm. And then when I was around 13 or 14, I remember I asked my parents if I could explore other religions, and they just said no. So there was still this sense of wanting to find some connection to source through a community of people.
Did you feel something was missing? Something spiritually was missing in you?
I think I felt, you? After my parents forbade me to learn about other religions, I think I started to feel disenchanted. And I think it was also just the dogma. Something didn't feel quite right in the way that spirituality was presented to me in that context. And I intuitively understood that, even if I wasn't sort of intellectually aware of it at that time, in a way that then led me away from sort of that form of organized religion. I knew that I needed a greater connection to source. Mm-hmm. So I started looking for ways to connect to that. And actually a friend of mine who was also a trader who'd worked at Goldman, she found out about the film project I mentioned. I think she maybe just Googled me or something. She found my blog. She reached out cold and we became friends, and she helped me on the film project. And she told me about a Bhakti monastery in the East Village. At this time I was living in New York. I just went there, and that felt like sort of a right step on the path. Then I was in a course about a completely different topic, and I think I was 28 at the time. And another girl in the course just happened to mention Vipassana meditation, and I just honed in on what she said, and it was just like this light bulb went off, and I like followed up with her after class and asked her to spell Vipassana, and I wrote it down. Yeah, I just zeroed in on what she said, and then signed up for a Vipassana course soon thereafter.
What kinds of courses were you taking initially before you heard her start talking about Vipassana meditation?
After I ultimately left Chicago and moved to New York to focus, because it was a better environment for my film project, and I started focusing on my film project full time. And when I first got to New York, I first went to like a Christian church, to like one of those mega churches. Uh-huh. And it just felt too artificial in their, they kind of had a salesy approach and sort of this like, it was like they were trying to cater to young consumers. It just felt, they were like running it like a business. So that mm-hmm. was my question. So it was like, okay, this isn't quite it. And then I found out about the Bhakti monastery and went there, and that was closer to what felt authentic to me intuitively. The specific course, I'm pretty sure I was in a course when I heard this girl mention Vipassana. It was about the Enneagram. So for those who aren't familiar, the Enneagram is sort of like Myers-Briggs in that it's this personality assessment framework. However, it's two-dimensional in that you learn what Enneagram type you are, but then there are also levels of psychological health. So I'm a type 7, and a healthy type 7 looks very different from a super unhealthy type 7. Super unhealthy type 7s like to drink a lot often. That's one thing. Anyway, so I was at this course, but they were using that, the Enneagram, as a tool to help students in the class increase their self-awareness toward the end of coming to an understanding that this is just your ego / identity, and it's a construct, and it isn't real, and the true thing is something you have to kind of plumb the ego to get to. Or that was my understanding, at least.
And this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great, and this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now, back to our show.
Was that a hard concept for you as you sort of sat there at the early stages? Because here you were, you had a film, you came from the trading world, you're a millennial. To say dissolve the ego, is that a hard concept to grapple with?
Absolutely. I don't think I understood. I think I maybe had a grasp of what that might mean intellectually speaking, but experientially, I had no idea what that was. Our society, I think, is set up in such a way that we were constantly being supplied with different ways to feed the ego. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you went to New York and you first started visiting the Bhakti Monastery and you're taking the courses and you're starting to get more engaged in tapping into what's becoming meaningful for you, did you feel like you were becoming happier because you had been so unhappy before?
I definitely started to notice. So I did the first Vipassana course, like I mentioned, and I went when I was 28. I actually did it over my 29th birthday, and then that kind of became a tradition where I would go each year over my birthday as sort of a gift to myself. In the first course, I was very mindful of, just very aware of the fact that a ton of suppressed anger was coming on the surface.
When you talk about, just for clarification, for our listeners, when you talk about a course, you're talking about the 10-day retreat, correct?
Right. I'm specifically talking about the courses taught by SN Goenka, which are free and you can sign up for it. Oh, they're 10-day courses, but they're teaching you how to do Vipassana meditation and then you're practicing it.
And these are silent retreats?
Yes. So you're silent for, I guess, 9.5-ish days, which sounds crazy to me. And when I initially went, I was still in this kind of consumptive frame of mind where at that time, I mean, alcohol, I was still consuming like a lot of alcohol and I would just kind of consume experiences. Anyway, I learned about this and part of me just thought like, oh, this sounds hard and it's a novel experience. So I just kind of want to see if I could do it. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the initial impetus. The thing is, I was really afraid of being quote unquote bored while there. At that time, boredom was the feeling that I worked hardest to avoid, I think. And what I came to realize is that when I thought I was bored, actually I was experiencing anxiety underneath of the boredom, but the boredom would trigger some activity that would then continue to distract me from actually moving through and dealing with the anxiety. So I was still carrying this like deep well of anxiety around. And Vipassana helped me to kind of just sit with it and understand that I had to sort of experience it to release it. And I was never bored for a second at that course.
Isn't that so interesting? I mean, I feel the same way about on retreats. You're really not bored and people are so surprised by that. But I'm curious about, did you deal with anxiety like growing up as a kid? Because I know you talked about the anxiety that you felt all the time, like dull anxiety, strong anxiety when you were working in your 20s. But was anxiety something that you had always dealt with? And so when you were sitting in your retreat, this started bubbling up a little bit more so that you could understand it?
Such a good question. I think that maybe I shouldn't call it anxiety so much as like agitation, because I think it encompassed fear, anger, shame. There were just sort of a lot of negative emotions that I think sort of fell under that umbrella that I was carrying around. I definitely think I had those things in me from childhood. But actually, we talked about this a little bit before, but an idea that I'm interested in getting out there in a larger way is that I really believe that all humans have these emotions. I think in Western society, we've reached this point where people think that they can admit that they experience depression or anxiety, and they think that maybe not everyone else does. But I think that isn't the case. I think all of us have some degree of agitation that we still need to work through and release. We all have that. And I think Vipassana, all types of meditation can help those things for sure. But in my experience, Vipassana gets to the root and lets you remove those things at the root.
It sounded like this was the perfect fit for you.
It's a practice that allows you to become still and then get at the root of, they call them like the impurities of mind, and allow those to come to the surface so that they can go away forever.
So they break apart the more you
recognize
them. Okay.
Yeah. Breaking apart is a really good way to put it. I've often felt that sort of like chunks of something had gone away. So it wasn't entirely released, but parts of it were.
What is your meditation practice like now? And how would you describe how you continue to evolve with your meditation practice? And then what is the Rachel like today versus Rachel 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
So I'm 33 now. So it's been about 5 years since I first started practicing Vipassana. I dabbled in other types of meditation just a little bit before then. I've now done 4 10-day courses, as I mentioned, roughly every year over my birthday. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of interesting in that So I did the first course when I was 28, turning 29. And I really felt like I experientially understood what it was and felt a big shift. And as I mentioned, a bunch of anger came out. But I only kept up the practice for one day afterward. And then I didn't do it for 2 years.
And wow.
Yeah. It was like I would still do Anapana, like breathing meditation. But yeah, I don't know why that was. It was interesting. Then 2 years later, I was very aware that anxiety and agitation seemed to be getting worse. So I thought I'd go back and do another course. And I did that. And something clicked. And then it was very easy after that to practice every day. I then did that for probably like maybe 20 to 40 minutes a day for like that next year. And then I did a third course. And then it just like stuck more deeply. And I was able to sit for up to an hour a day. Now I just came back from my fifth course 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sitting for an hour in the morning and an hour at night. That would have sounded totally insane to me at the beginning. But now I just want to do it. I'm not being disciplined or structured. I just want to do it. And I can see the positive immediate impacts when I do that.
I'm curious about when you went to your first retreat that you said you didn't meditate for like 2 years afterwards. I'm wondering what happened. Like, what would you say to other people who are initially either discouraged or have that sort of big gap in their meditation practice? And then I'm wondering how meditating for 2 hours a day changes you.
So the first question is like, what happened that made me not do it?
Yeah. And then I guess the other question would be then you started again. So yeah, but what stalled you, I guess?
I wish I had a clearer sense of what it was. I mean, it was, I think I did have a sense that I hadn't established the practice deeply enough to kind of easily sit and do it on a daily basis. They do say at the Goenka Vipassana retreats that I remember him commenting once in one of the videos that if people have done two courses, then they tend to do it for the rest of their lives.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. So people tend to drop off after that first course, but I mean, going for longer than 10 days is probably too much for someone who's just beginning to start practicing. Yeah, it was just, I knew I could feel the immediate benefits though. I mean, I knew that I felt a lot lighter even after that first course. I had an incredible experience that was unlike anything I'd ever come close to touching previous to that. So I knew that it helped enough that I knew that I wanted to go back later on.
Yeah.
So, and then it just clicked. In terms of your second question, which I think was like the benefits now of doing it today. It's funny because it's so experiential. It's almost seems in some ways like putting it into words is a disservice or it's just insufficient. But I've noticed that I've eliminated a lot of things that I had been putting energy toward that weren't really working for me or weren't necessary that I had maybe thought were necessary previously. So I used to overschedule things that I didn't need to overschedule. Now I'm a lot better about understanding that I should say no to something or set a boundary around something. Other times I can clearly see that I should embrace something or practice something or take advantage of a specific opportunity. Just sort of the clarity of mind there. It's like my mind runs a lot less than it used to.
Well, it sounds like you have more clarity, more focus, and you can filter what matters most.
Yes, absolutely. And I even noticed after the first course, it seemed like, wow, I can't like not be at work for 10 days. Like that's nuts. Things have always gone beautifully in terms of work while I've been in course. It just seems like they sort of align. But after the first course, even very early in my practice, I noticed that I had this clear sense that when I tried to do some task that I thought would have taken me a few hours to do before the course, I was able to knock out those tasks in something like 30 minutes. So my ability to be more productive was just sharpened.
That's amazing.
Yes.
And then you're an entrepreneur. I want you to talk just for a little bit about your company and then how it helps you as a leader, an entrepreneur. You're doing all of these amazing things that have such great social impact. And I'd love to hear about that and then how your meditation practice really helps to fuel the work that you're doing.
Awesome. Yeah. The film project led me to launch a startup company called Seeds, which builds social good into apps and websites. In doing so, we can improve the likelihood that a user will spend in an app or on a website by something like 60%. So we can improve revenues while doing good at the same time. And it's sort of this win-win situation for people that use the product. Seeds has come together and kind of taken this direction in large part because of my experience with Vipassana meditation. One epiphany I had at this past course that I just completed 2 weeks ago was, we live in a patriarchy, right? All patriarchal structures overvalue the masculine, which I would identify as sort of active, externally striving, doing energy, and undervalue the feminine, which I would say is more like being receptive, just being. All humans have both masculine and feminine energy, yin and yang. But the structure has taught us to overvalue the masculine and undervalue the feminine. And I think that's the cause of a lot of pain in the world. That imbalance is the cause of a lot of problems. Vipassana has helped me bring a greater balance in myself. And now I'm thinking about how to ground that within my company. I wasn't very mindful about it initially. I thought I just needed to keep running to keep us moving forward. And I've only recently kind of stepped back and thought about how to be intentional about this.
Your meditation practice has helped to evolve your mindset and your business and your personal growth. Like, it's just had such a positive impact on you and your way of seeing the world. And it's great that you're also offering that up to so many other people with what you're doing. So I really applaud you for that.
Thanks. I mean, I'd love for more people to use the Seeds products. It's free to integrate. There's no cost to any business or any developer to use the product. And it just inspires users to spend more money in your app while simultaneously contributing to social good. Another trend that I hope and think is becoming more predominant is this idea that businesses need to be socially conscious in some way. Our tool can allow a business to build that into their product directly in 30 minutes or less. We can just take care of that for you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us today, Rachel. You have an amazing story, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Rachel for being on our show today. You can find out more about her and her company at playseeds.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, can you take a minute to rate and review it? And if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to download Meditation Studio in the App Store or on Google Play. We'll see you next time. We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.